Hey everyone, the crowdfunding campaign for Video Game High School Season 3 is now live. Head on over to rocketjump.com/campaign, pledge for some campaign-exclusive rad perks, and help make the final season of VGHS as awesome as it can possibly be. Hey, this is Freddie.
And this is Dez.
Welcome to podcast number 35 of the Face Rocker Podcast. This week we sat down with Bernie and Gavin of Rooster Teeth. We talked about quite a bit of stuff. And these guys are like OG video legends, so it was awesome.
Oh, from way back in the day.
Yeah, they were doing it since before YouTube. So it was great to have a conversation with them. You can actually check them out in the latest episode of Movie Night, Secret Santa. They play two goons that get killed off of a
cliff. If you spot them, yeah, hit us up on the comments.
For sure. Wanted to tell you about a few things before we get going. We're doing a little fun thing with World of Warplanes. We have a little bit of a contest going on right now. You can head over to rocketjump.com to see it. And basically, you need to download it, take a selfie of yourself. You can see all the details on the contest page. But head over to bit.ly/RJUMP, WOWP. Well, that's impossible. We'll put it in the description. You can see it. But download the game. Use the code, if you're in the United States, use the code GETAIRBORNE to get 7 days of premium for free and maybe win some of these sweet Rig headsets. We're giving away 5 of them and a next-gen console of your choice to people who are participating. So head on over to our site and check it out. Another thing, Netflix. VGHS Season 1 and 2 is on Netflix, which is awesome. You can head over to netflix.com/rocketjump.
Sign up and get 1 free month, actually. We originally incorrectly reported the number of months here, so Dez and I are just riffing on the incorrect number. So sorry about that, everybody. Sorry for the confusion. It's 1 free month.
If you're thinking about signing up for Netflix, head on over to netflix.com/rocketjump. It'll help us out. And take a look. Video Game High School up on there. Ad-free, fantastic, and streaming. Finally, one last thing. iTunes. We know a lot of you guys like to watch this on YouTube and put it on the background. It's awesome. It's fantastic. It's how I do it. However, the way iTunes works and the way podcasts works, everyone looks at the subscriber numbers and stuff. So if you could do us a huge favor, head on over to iTunes, find us on there. We'll put the link down there if you're on our site and subscribe to us on iTunes. It'll help us out immensely with being able to do this.
Just click the little button.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything.
Hurt.
You don't have to do anything. You can just subscribe to it. Your computer will do all the work for you. Mm-hmm. This is the future. Our machines do our work for us. So please subscribe to us on iTunes, the Face Rocker Podcast. Anyway, enough talking. Let's get to it.
Yeah, they lost my first episode too.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, they went back.
Lost.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Lost.
Right.
Then they learned everything about me, and they were like, "Now we can really fucking hammer him." God, it's brutal.
Oh man,
they're terrible people.
Oh, Charlie's still in here.
Hey, Charles Barkley, hanging out with us. Yeah, we're okay. So here's the thing. So we are with Bernie and Gavin from Rooster Teeth.
Hello.
And here's the thing that actually really surprises me. There is very little overlap between our audiences. As far
does
as I can
that
tell.
Surprise you?
Bernie's like, of course there's not. Come on.
You guys make bullshit.
I guess in my head, I don't, you know what it is? I don't know how big it really is. Like, in my head, it's like, it wouldn't be surprising if it was like, yeah, there's like 100,000 million people, whatever it is. But to me, it's like, it's always felt like, okay, gamer crowd is the gamer crowd, but clearly it isn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me because, like, you guys, we look at you guys and we're like, man, we wish we had what those guys had, because you guys
wish
have
had Gavin.
Yeah,
wish we had Gavin. Definitely.
Oh yeah, for sure. But you guys have had. You guys have been. You guys are the OGs when it comes to.
Well, you guys were around
online video
before we even started. Like,
yeah, exactly.
We remember being in high school watching Red vs. Blue and just like the creation of this. I remember when you guys did your first non-Red vs. Blue thing. What was that? It was like 6 episodes. It was a horror game. It was another machinima type.
Panics. It was Panics.
Panics.
Yeah.
I remember. It's like, I was like, wait, they're doing more stuff. Like, it was the first. I don't remember successful. I'll be honest. I remember it'd be like, ah, it's not Red vs. Blue. But it was like literally the first thing was like, but they're doing more stuff. And then as it went on, I was like, holy shit, this is becoming like a whole thing. Like, you guys are becoming like a studio, like a whole brand is. Yeah. So.
And it was always, by the way, not to. I feel like we're just talking at you guys right now because
I love the lathering. It's awesome. Yeah. It feels so good.
But it's always hilarious to me when people come to us and they're like, oh yeah, you guys are doing this and this. And we're like, you guys don't look at the internet history very much, or the history of the internet, not internet history. There's horrible things in internet history. But clearly you don't, because we're not. We're not the first ones here doing this by a long shot, by a matter of years in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. with what you guys do. Yeah. So I don't know. To me, it's always just interesting how quickly, how quickly people forget things.
Oh, no. We have that within our own audience. Because when we introduce new shows and we have a younger audience, they will have no idea about what took place in the first 5 years of our company. Our company started in 2003. We're now in our 11th year. We have people that come in now, who start watching internet video even, like 12 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, we were doing, Red versus Blue when they were one,
Whoa.
When we started Red versus Blue, which is, I guess you could say, our tentpole show that we're known for best.
Yeah.
It's a Halo cartoon.
That's a funny thing, right? I'm sitting here, I'm like, we should probably contextualize this, but I feel like we shouldn't. But at the same time, for people listening, it's like, yeah, okay, real quick, just to go back, this is Red vs. Blue. It's a Halo cartoon. It was what Machinima originally meant before Machinima changed its meaning.
Little M Machinima, yeah. Mm-hmm. We should make jokes when they called us and they told us we what we were doing was called Machinima, because we thought we invented this form of animation. We were amazed with ourselves. And there's a guy, Paul Marino, he works at BioWare now, and he was the head of the Machinima Academy of Arts and Sciences. They handed out awards for this stuff. They said, yeah, no, what you're doing has a name. It's called Machinima, with a little M, made up by a guy in Scotland. And then he's the guy who sold his company, Machinima.com, to a group of investors in Southern California. They made Machinima
into a capital M thing.
Machinima became a brand.
It was when people used to try and promote, pronounce the word Machinima.
I had that problem so hard.
Machinima.
They'd like add syllables where they were. Machinima.
We thought the word was so silly, we would try to compete with it. We said, we're calling what we do render vision. So we came with silly terms and things like that.
Like Vista Vision, old film terms for it. It's like, oh, you could have done render scope, and it's like, oh, it's wider now.
Yeah. But it's so frustrating though when people don't even know that, like they don't have any memory of that Machinima was a thing. And when Red vs. Blue started, like this form of filmmaking was going to go on and be this thing. There was going to be all these different productions made this way.
And I remember, and this is super embarrassing, I remember downloading Quake 2 demos and playing them back. To play them back, you go into the console of Quake 2 and they play back this demo file. And I remember seeing some of these movies that were done entirely in the Quake 2 engine playing back from Quake. And I was like, this is cool. This is so impractical.
You had to have the game to watch it.
So it wasn't like a movie. It was just like a memory file from the game. Halo 3 save film.
But they had modified the cameras to cut and stuff. And it was like, I remember trying to download some of these old tools in like Windows 98 ME Millennium Edition. No, Windows Millennium Edition was what my old Dell was rocking back in the day. And like, you're just like, okay, here's how you do a cut in this. And it's like, oh, you have to reposition the camera within the game and then record that demo. And then it's like, what is going on? It's so far beyond me. You guys figured out the easier way to do it.
It's like you're doing in-camera editing inside of a virtual world.
Right.
It's like this layer within a layer.
Yeah, it freaks me out.
Yeah.
It still freaks me out to this day.
I remember there was I don't think it was Forbes, but I remember when you guys came out, there was articles about this is the future of filmmaking. Like, this is going to be everything. Because there was the Sims. Like, people were doing
the
Sims.
You know, the last say it, Matt.
But well, you guys obviously started moving on to other stuff.
Well, in a weird way, isn't it?
But it is. No. I mean, that's what I mean. It was I just remember coming up in film, and I was like, this is fascinating, because there's the Valve and all their mods and stuff like that, and Gary's mod and things like that. It was, and I remember some of the first
Source
film
Filmmaker
was
probably
that.
One of the most powerful tools that's out there today. It's just that not many people know how to use it.
Yeah, and it's kind of a weird tool.
It's also the licensing, and you can't use it for commercial, or is that not true? So remember, we looked at it for a moment when they first. Have you played with it?
A
lot.
We did one of the things that when Red vs. Blue got popular. One of the practical applications of it is we could take a video game and we could make it look as good as it could and still be representative of the game.
Right.
So that has a commercial application. We've made a lot of television commercials for video games over the year. Like, we made all the EA Sports commercials that had gameplay in them for 4 or 5 years.
Awesome. To me, and again, that's a side of what you guys do. That again, if nobody knows about this,
we never publicize that part of it,
which is again hilarious, because it's like, wow, okay, we right now, we're trying to become essentially sort of the following in your footsteps. We're trying to become a production entity and all the various things. So we have a post production arm.
I'm so surprised to hear you guys describe yourself as trying to achieve that, because to me it's like you guys right now in this moment are that group that's doing it as well as anybody else out there.
It's good that we have that perception outwards, guys. Let's try and maintain.
Hey, we did it, right?
Let's try and maintain
that. That was the plan.
Most of Rocket Jump is just us screaming.
What are we doing? Exactly, yeah.
But we stay calm on camera.
Yeah, that's the one thing we do have.
There's something we have in common right there. Like, the Rocket Jump you guys have as a brand over everything else.
Yes.
You know, starting as Freddie W., which a lot of people thought was one person on the whole channel.
It's interesting because that was a very conscious decision this year, because it's like, okay, we need to expand out. We can't just be my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we want to find other creators. We want to find someone to do another series, and we trust, and we think it's cool. It's like, by the way, then it's going to go on a channel. It's got my name on it, so everyone's going to think that I made it myself by myself, and that nobody else is involved. You cool with that? No, come back. No, don't. You know, so it's like, if we didn't do that, nobody would hang around, and we have to in a weird way. It's like you have to unite under a brand.
Well, what was that transition? Because it might have been, I just didn't notice. I was about to say, I might have not noticed it because I was so young, literally, when you guys started. It was like I was watching it even before high school. But there was definitely a time period where I only knew you guys as Red vs. Blue. Right. And I remember I stopped watching for a while. I was in high school or college or something. I came back. It was like Rooster Teeth. Like I was like, what is Rooster Teeth? Mm. It's like, oh, it's still Red vs. Blue. And I started watching and whatnot. But when did you do that transition, or whether you're always kind of branded Rooster Teeth?
We always had Rooster Teeth after the trailer, which was in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
We introduced the Rooster Teeth company making Red vs. Blue because, I mean, we just had this idea that, you know, we were educating people at the time that this isn't just a one-off video.
Yeah.
That you're going to watch this one, and there's going to be another one next week. And from day one, if you go back and look at the very first videos we did, from the day it started, we called it the popular web series Red vs. Blue, even before it started. just to start educating people, like, oh, this is the popular web series Red vs. Blue. And that's in episode two, in our PSA. And we put the Rooster Teeth brand over it because we didn't, I mean, the episodes were supposed to go 6 episodes and done. Then we thought, we need something to hold people in place, like when we're making a new show, when people get tired of this thing, it's done. And now here we are, you know, 11 seasons in, you know, heading into 12. So
right.
Yeah.
I mean, was there a name of your company before you actually?
No, it didn't exist.
Rooster Teeth?
No, the URL was redversusblue.com.
Yeah.
And then we switched it over to roosterteeth.com.
Mm-hmm. So you did it very early on.
Yeah.
Gav was actually one of our very first viewers.
Yeah, I was a fan of Red vs. Blue. That's how I know them. I'm just a fan from England. Signed up on their website in 2003.
Are you still just a fan, or?
Yeah,
always. I can touch him in real life now. Right?
He's
I've earned it.
The highest level of creepiness. Yeah, you managed to do it all the way across the pond, and now he's right next to you, and at any point could kill you in your sleep.
But it's an awesome feeling. Like, I was 14, some dumb 14-year-old kid who was going to school, and, you know, stacking fruit and veg in a supermarket, and then
look like a girl.
I had really girl. I looked like I was in Hanson.
He did.
Yeah, got rid of that.
And it's interesting because, you know, your background is like super. I mean, like, I know your equivalent in Hollywood. Like, there's the guys. It's like the Phantom Text and stuff. It's like it's so interesting.
Yeah.
To go from.
I met a guy in my town who just happened to have. There were two Phantoms in the UK at that time.
Yeah.
They were very old ones, they were standard def, and he had both of them. So he was pretty much, if there was slow-mo on TV in a commercial, he did it. And I was like, I love slow-mo, I can't believe this guy's in my town. So I just kind of shadowed him on his job for a year for free, went around seeing. And it got to the point where he found a use for me, and then I worked for him. And then for like 7 years, I just did that. I shot commercials and movies and music videos in the UK. And we were known as the slow-mo guys.
Yeah.
Like, in the industry.
Because that's all. Of course.
But then he's not the guy from the slow-mo guys channel. He's a really old guy. But
a really dumb guy.
I just like the idea. Because people used to come up to us on set and be like, you're the slow-mo guys, right? And it's like, yeah, we're going to do the slow-mo on this thing.
Yeah,
I just like
that
name. It's just catchy.
No, it's a good name. Yeah. And the funny thing is, too, it's also like, in, you know, having done like the visual effects stuff and as, you know, freelancing, it's also the same thing where you're just like, you're that part of it, and it's almost like what you do is magical, and like nobody messes with you because you're the only ones who could do it. Like, I've seen this. Like, people, it's weird the mysticism that goes around on set, especially here. And it's like, oh yeah, you can't touch that. It's like the camera's rebooting. Oh yeah, stay away from it. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, it has to rest. We gotta put the thing over. And it's like, what?
They used to be really temperamental. Like, you had to have the camera on for like 40 minutes before it would film anything.
Like, the temperature?
Yeah, the sensor would fluctuate so much that the grain would be like.
It had to warp the time field.
Yeah, and then you had to like cover the lens and do a black reference. They actually have an internal capping shutter that does that on its own. But I used to be like up a ladder with a mouse mat against the lens usually, which is how I used to do that.
So he actually had a really traditional like apprenticeship style coming up.
Yeah,
that's rare.
Yeah, which is rare. I was just really young. Like I started when I was 17, mm-hmm. and I was on movies. So yeah, it was like way in at the deep end.
there's like a perfect time period where you're young enough, but most people aren't like proactive enough to be there. But if you're young enough, you could go up to films and be like, "Hey, can I help?" I'm like, "Oh, that's just a cool kid." Once you get to like 17, it's like, "Who the fuck? Go get a job, man!" Like,
yeah, who's this asshole?
Like, if you're young, you can probably get away with being like, "Hey, I'll just help for free, man. I just want to learn how to." I tried to do that right now, if I walked onto a film set,
maybe like, who is this creepy
like,
dude?
Hey, can I just help out for free? Like, get off the set. Who are you?
I was a big fan of Shaun of the Dead when I was young. All of a sudden, the first movie I worked on was Hot Fuzz. It was the shot of the police station at the end blowing up. It was a model, like probably the size of this table. I was just like, I'm doing it. This is going to be in the movie, and I'm
Do it slow, yeah.
He shot Top Gear, too. He got to see who the Stig was like years before anybody had any even speculation of it.
Oh, man.
As a young British boy. But he, I don't know if this is live, and I don't know if we can tell the story or not.
It's live.
And I'll probably get it wrong, but didn't you, when you were like 17, didn't you have to be on a shoot with Kate Moss topless?
Yeah.
As a 17-year-old?
Oh, yeah. He had to be there.
Yeah.
Had to be there.
It was Rimmel. She was getting hosed down and like oh, like this. And then she was wet. So for the next take, she needed a dry shirt.
Yeah, it needed to dry
so
off.
She was just like, give me another one. And I was just like, that's in real life in front of me right now. This is great. I really like this job.
But because he came up and, you know, right away, like right in grade school, got this apprenticeship and came up that way, he didn't go to university.
Mm.
And so we loved Gav. He was one of the top members in our community site. We built a social media site for Rooster Teeth another way to keep people in place and have them do something. And there was a gaming function of it where people would level up their profiles. And he had always had one of the most popular profiles. And we loved Gavin. We wanted to find a way to have him come work for us. But because he didn't go to university, him getting a visa was a difficult thing. So he actually started the Slow Mo Guys channel
in order to
so that we could submit him for awards, get him some renown, and he could get a visa.
03, is that it? The what is
01.
01 visa.
I was just kind of bummed because I'd done all this cool stuff, like all this movie stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It wasn't deemed a very creative position because most of the time it's a technician and you're kind of just wrestling the camera. so I was like, well, this blows, and I was just kind of bummed out. I still had a really cool job and stuff, but I was like, there's a really expensive and really pretty rare for this country high-speed camera just sat in a box at the weekends.
I've
got to be able to become well-known with this thing. YouTube was the perfect choice. And I'd uploaded some slow-mo stuff, some very early stuff, and it had gone viral, the equivalent of what viral was before YouTube.
Because all these technicians are definitely not thinking
about,
they're thinking, this is my gig, and I'm going to go to a job and shoot, and the card is getting shot, and the milk droplet's going in again, and we're done.
There we go. Water
balloon. Yeah, I had like a video of me throwing a balloon at someone's face. We shot it in 2004, and all I did was I hosted it, and I put it in my journal on Rooster Teeth.
Yeah.
Someone then downloaded that and uploaded it. It was on Break.
Oh, so you didn't even upload
it? No, I've never uploaded that video, but it's you've probably seen it at some point.
Yeah.
It was one of the really early ones, but it ended up on bigboys.com, which is break.com now. And like right on the front page, I was like... and one of the first times I came to Austin, I walked into a coffee shop below the old Rooster Teeth office, and someone was watching it on a laptop. Weird. And I was just
his
like,
first day in the U.S., he walked in and saw somebody watching his video from his garden.
That's
UK.
A very skewed view of the U.S.
From,
at that point.
From that point, I'm like... there's an audience that people want to see weird stuff in slow motion.
From that point, you're like, I'm huge here.
Yeah, it's crazy because he made that channel to qualify for a visa to come work for us. And now you have how many subs on?
There's 3 million on Slow Motion.
Yeah, I mean, he's got videos that are way beyond it. He's got a video that's, he'll immediately correct me. He's got a video that's got 38 million views.
43.
You know, and I think
nothing that anyone's counting or anything.
Yeah, he said that 6-foot water balloon video's got 43 million views on it. You know, it's crazy. And so it's like, by the time we actually were going to get him a visa, where the company was like, does Gavin even want to come work anymore?
Can't afford him anymore.
Is that even necessary? Yeah, exactly.
He got too cool. And it's one of those things where, it's everyone gets to it from sort of a different spot, but it's really interesting to see kind of where you come from. And a lot of the times, the one I see this, you know, a very common thread is just like it's figuring out something interesting to do with what you have access to. You know, I think there's so many people now that are just
Definitely.
Like, what do I do now? What do I do? How do I do this? And it's just like, why are you asking me? You know your life better than I do. What do you have going
look around
on?
You?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, but here's the thing that's really interesting about YouTube site. You really don't get a lot of the people. Not a lot of people are coming from like any sort of traditional background. There's a lot of sort of people coming, especially right now at least, on the YouTube side, which is just like, I stumbled upon doing this, and I started doing this, and it kind of caught on, and it's not like from any sort of filmmaking background, which, you know, I think even, I mean, like, I remember, I see the poster with you, like, is it you and Joel on the, in your, in the offices there?
Yeah,
the
old school. It's a 16 millimeter film that we made in college. I was a computer science student.
Yeah.
And I had switched to computer science from pre-med. And so I had, like, I have, like, organic chemistry as an elective on my transcript. It's the worst college transcript ever. But I ended up with a lot of classes that I had to take prerequisites one after the other. So I ended up with, like, 3 or 6 hours a semester. That was it. So I wandered down to the TV station, the student television station. I said, hey, I'm a computer science student. I want to learn how to make movies. Rodriguez had just made El Mariachi at UT. And so I had this idea, if I want to learn how to make movies, don't sit in a class, spend the money, just make a movie. And by the time I'm done, I'll know everything I need to know to make movies. Mm-hmm. So that's when I met Matt, my production partner. He was a film student.
Oh, okay.
I met him to make that movie. We met Joel, who's in our show, Red vs. Blue. He's one of our main actors. And yeah, we shot a 16 millimeter film. And then I built a nonlinear editor. This is like 98. So I built a nonlinear editor with a 4 gig drive in it. Cost $1,500 for a 4 gig drive. We could digitize like 12 minutes at a time and work on it that way. And so we did that. It took us like a year. And yeah, after that, we went to the film festival circuit, tried all that. And I call that the process of, you go to a film festival, it's like you're trying to convince 5 people to let you show the movie to 200 people. That's like your ultimate goal in that. And Matt had moved out to LA, was working in visual effects. Joel had come out here to work as an actor. And I was just tooling around with some guys back in Austin making funny videos. We made an Apple Switch ad parody. You know, the where they said the white background, they switched to Mac? Yeah. We did one with Gus where we said he switched to Mac for the games. And then he realizes over the course of the video there's no games on Mac. And like he's playing Photoshop and stuff like that. And we put that up. And this is 2001. We put it up online, had to encode it ourselves as QuickTime and WMV and DivX and put it up online. And Matt was at his office here in LA.
Yeah.
And the next day, I got a call from him. He said, I just saw this video on a guy's desk at work, and it's Gus in it. And I said, I put that up like 12 hours ago or, you know, 16 hours ago, right after work. And I realized, here's a guy that I would have called and said, watch this video. Mm. And before I could do that, it got to him. Mm. Which is, I think, a common story today. But at the time, it was like, why the hell are we doing all this film festival stuff?
Yeah.
Let's just get busy doing this ourselves and going directly
and
to
the
people.
Hard thing back then was, I mean, for us originally, like, I'm sure it must be similar, like YouTube was like, it was a hosting platform where you didn't have to pay money. Like, that was really what it was.
It was
like,
a huge deal.
Because I remember
wasn't even around when you started?
No. They were three years in our mission.
And
for us, when we started out, it was just like, because I was hosting it on the USC student 20 megabytes. And
I hosted some videos on MySpace.
Whoa.
Like, because they had their, because we were talking about the John Woo contest from a while ago. That was, I can't find it anymore because it's on MySpace.
Harsh.
See, we had the other problem, which is now lost to history, which is we put a video online. It got linked on Slashdot, FARC, and Penny Arcade in one day.
Oh, no.
Brought our servers down. We tried to find a way to rehost it. At the end of the month, we had a $15,000 server bill for the month. We were working in tech support at the time. And that was like that generation of content people.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people that came out of tech support.
Oh, yeah. Did
it. Like the Homestar guys, who are a huge influence on us.
Yeah.
The Homestar Runner. There was a lot of Flash animation. It seems like all those people were like miserable tech support people who were like, you know, we're finding a way to vent.
Yeah.
You talk about being lost to history. Homestar Runner, you talk to people today, they just don't know.
That is
know.
The first viral series.
There was a good AV Club article. Todd Vanderhoff just wrote he wrote this massive history on Homestar Runner.
And really?
Because it is. It's like, that's one of the most important.
It was to me, bar none.
I mean, I remember, it must be the same way I think, you know, some kids now wait for episodes of stuff coming out from us. I remember waiting for Strong Bad Email.
Yep.
Like every Friday it was, and like getting my mind blown every time. We'd all gather around at school to watch Strong Bad Email.
Well, Homestar Runner was like kind of just even realizing what the internet was to me at that time, because first it was like, what's the internet? That's the thing into
the chat rooms
school.
On AOL.
No, like I logged into at school to find like articles. That's all I knew it was, right? Then it was like,
that's right, talk
AOL
to my adult
chat.
Friend.
Then there was like AOL chat rooms. Like, wait, you can talk to people on the internet? Because we're at the time period where we remember the growth.
I still remember the day I was like, colon, right parentheses, what's that mean? The guy, turn your head sideways. I'm like,
the internet was like the place to go to the Britannica Encyclopedia. Like, you know, like the CD that came for free.
And then one day
somebody's like, have you seen the Homestar Runner? And it was this, I was like, you can do this? Like, you can see this on the internet? Like, what is, and then that's like, that's the whole time period of Hamster Dance and Banana, oh God, and all that other stuff. YTMDs. Yep. And
well, that's why Flash stuff did so well back then.
Bandwidth.
Was, yeah, the codec, you could compress that vector animation so far down and scale it so far up without any kind of increase in the file size. And that's what made all this revolution possible. It was with online video was the Flash codec coming out, and that's what YouTube is based on, or was based on.
Yeah, back in the day, VP, whatever, 8 or 7.
There's videos that like Shockwave. Remember Shockwave.com?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember all the great movie tie-in sites that had Shockwave Flash games and being like, in my head, there's a moment where I was like, 2 megabytes, I'll be here all day. I'm gonna go outside. Like, I'd be like, I'd only download things that were like a megabyte, and even then, I was like, God, that's a lot.
I remember when YouTube started, I'd load a video, and I'd look at the timer, the bottom, the bar, and I'd see, 3 minutes? Who's going to watch 3 minutes of a video?
Yeah.
Now it's like hour and a half, you know? Oh, it's really grown up.
Let's pour one out for, of course, Real Player, the greatest the greatest video codec of all time and the greatest video player.
That's how we all know what buffering means.
Did anyone spend more time watching the video?
That's how we all learned what?
Like, buffering was always longer than the actual video,
yeah,
right?
Especially
like,
yeah.
Every single time
yeah.
You use it.
And there's that, and Real Player would seem just to get bigger and bigger to the point, because there's the timers, like, it was competing with Shockwave. So, like, I was like, I remember downloading, like, Real Player, like, 5, and it came with, like, and like a games button. I was like, yeah. What the hell? what is this? Like
I remember, Real Studios games?
Yeah, exactly. It was like nuts. And that was like the time of Winamp and all that. That was a weird time period.
Winamp just shut down.
That's did it?
So hard. Yeah, you didn't hear about this?
Oh, man.
They're
I should
like,
pour one
Winamp is making no more money.
That's a sad day.
That's because they never charge for their skins.
They left money on the table. I had some sick anime skins.
Like, I remember that being like, well, I can't listen to this Star Wars soundtrack until I find the right Star Wars skin for it.
Not the R2-D2, the EQ.
That's pretty cool.
Not only then will John Williams' score be properly contextualized in my music here.
I want to meet the precocious kid who just was like the Winamp skin master. Like, it's like, damn, I totally did the wrong thing. Like, I spent like 3 years of like IT, like in like computer science, learning how to skin Winamp things.
I remember many Fridays spent organizing my MP3 library download through Napster and being like, better bulk rename, and finding these bulk renaming utilities. This is why, by the way, we are who we are today, was because Friday night. You know, all these Nobuo Uematsu soundtracks for Final Fantasy need to get categorized, and damn it, they're not going to do it themselves.
Yep.
So you were a computer science guy originally?
Yeah, originally I started as pre-med and then switched to computer science.
And then film.
No, I never got a degree in film.
Well, but now
yeah,
you do.
But then I study film. Yeah. So I don't have any education in film whatsoever, and I own a production company.
But where did
and
the film,
for
where did the film interest come from?
I just always had it. Always had the bug of, like, I'd start off as, like, creative writing in high school, and then, you know, I mean... Back when I went to school, early 90s, high school, like when I graduated, there was no, like, even a Hi8 camera was like a rare thing to get your hands on.
Yeah.
It was like, if you want a Hi8 camera, it was going to be like a $2,000 purchase. There was no digitized video, anything like that. I learned to edit on a AB roll, you know, like hard cuts on tapes and stuff like that. I mean, I wasn't editing on like a Steenbeck cutting film or anything.
Yeah.
But that revolution all happened just as I started. So, yeah.
But that would allow you to do, like, because Rooster Teeth, then when it started, did you just host your own videos on your own player? Like, what was even, if it was before YouTube, what were you using?
So we had to tell people, that was a huge hassle. One of the biggest things that saved us money or made us money over the years was the change in the codecs, because our file sizes went from 80 megs for a postage stamp size 3 minute video. So now we can do 17 megs for, you know, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it's, people don't care. And the best part about it is it's in your browser. Before, we had to tell people how to download codecs.
Oh,
we
had the QuickTime link. And
every episode of Red vs. Blue came with right click and download, or, you know, BitTorrent, if you want to use that as well.
Yeah,
we educated people how to use BitTorrent, and then it became the biggest piracy tool ever, and they pirated our DVDs, so that was awesome. Yeah, we used like DivX, WMV, QuickTime, and then we did a low-res and a high-res version, so I'd encode 6 files every week for just one video, so that everybody could see this thing. So when it all got unified, that was great. And then, you know, the idea was, too, back in the day that, oh, let's get a popular thing, and then the ad truck will just show up at the front door. It didn't work that way at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, YouTube is kind of like that. It enables people to become partners, and they can just start, check a button, and then they have ads and monetize their videos. It was a lot harder.
We have a friend of ours who ran the top Britney Spears fan site.
Really?
In the world at the time, worldofbritney.com. And because we always wonder, like, man, what are you, like, he's a Swedish guy. He was a skydiver in one of our, he hooked us up the skydiving video, and because he likes skydiving. And when I was like, what does he do? Do we
know what he does. And finally, we got the story out of him where he's like, oh, I just sold my website, which I ran. And he was telling us stories of the heyday of pop-ups and ads and display ads. And he was like, yeah, you want to know what's crazy? Pop-up ads, you want to know why they were everywhere? $15 CPM. Just straight up, if it popped up, you got every thousand, $15. And we're like, what? Like, that's insane. It's like, yeah, $20, $20 to $25. Display ads, like, yeah, each site, each page on World, it's like $50 just every time it showed. And I was like, dude, that's insane, you know, for as a CPM number. And we're just like, now, of course, now the video is like all in single digits, even, you know, low single digits. We're just like, what? That's, and then they're like, yeah, no wonder there was a tech bubble. Are you kidding? These websites are sitting here getting $50 every 1,000 people who show up.
But then they got crazy too, because you'd be in an ad network and then you could sign people up in your ad network.
Oh, yeah.
And inherit everything. It was a multi-level.
Do you
marketing.
Remember the like, click, oh, yeah, the click to get stuff things?
And people all would, advantage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then,
one,
and then
yeah,
people would like sit then like, and write scripts to just click on ads, yep, for their computer and then be like, I made $8, but I signed up a bunch of people, which means actually this month I made $2,000.
Web rings?
Web rings.
Remember? Yeah. Web rings, we were just talking, like, they're gone. the top bar of just like going from, and it's how, so weird they all connected.
And how every site seemed to somehow be the top 1% of all websites.
Oh, yeah, yeah, always.
And the awards award page. Yeah. I love
Golden Web Award.
Yeah, what happened, yeah, to the Golden Web Award?
Hit counters, Webbies, I'm sure.
We should put a hit counter on Rocket Jump.
Hey guys, how's it going? Jimmy Wong, aka Ted from VGHS here, telling you to check out shop.rocketjump.com. We've got brand new merchandise like iPhone cases and iPad decals to shirts, Blu-rays, and posters, including brand new Season 2 designs from our friends at Danger Brain. There's also the incredibly popular VGHS hoodie, and some of our older shirts are on sale for a great price. So make sure you check it out right after this podcast at shop.rocketjump.com.
Wally. You know, we were just doing our podcast awards, which you won one of our first podcast awards,
yes,
for
way back.
Flower Warfare.
Way back.
We loved your video, and that was one of our first Internet Video of the Year awards we gave out. But we were talking about this year in movies. There was really, it was a crazy year of just like major duds that just didn't go anywhere. And do anything. It's like movies that should have been huge but weren't, like World War Z and Ender's Game, Star Trek that people panned. You know,
I
liked it actually. I don't know, a lot of people didn't, but yeah. But it was a crazy.
My favorite
year.
Thing about that Star Trek was like, it's the world's like, it is 9/11 times 1,000 just happened here, and then it's like one block later in San Francisco, business as usual. Like, it's like they're running, and like, you don't think about it because the pace is so high. But then on a second viewing, you're like, these guys just saw a spaceship explode 10 buildings, and this guy is like holding a coffee and he's late for work. Like, what's going on? And it's like, and you're just running past the crowd. And
the Man of Steel is like that when Clark Kent glass and goes to work. And, where is he going to work?
Yeah,
because everything I saw got destroyed.
Everyone's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Man of Steel.
Or they just make out in front of.
Oh, that
everybody
was
dead.
That was my
that was
favorite.
Terrifying.
My favorite moment in movies this year was Man of Steel when Superman makes out within super earshot of clearly people being crushed to death.
He's standing in the equivalent of the Ground Zero hole, making out with his woman.
And then it's like,
but he barely knows. Like, they haven't even set up a romance. He's just like, yeah, we're the two attractive people in this movie. So we're gonna kiss.
And then I don't know if you saw it in theaters, but the line in Superman where he's like, I heard that doesn't happen, but it doesn't happen with humans because I'm not human. It was like, she's like, I heard it only goes downhill after the first kiss. And then Superman goes, good thing I'm not human because that only happens with humans. I saw people going like, ooh, like out of my seat. Oh, God.
That's also one of those lines that just like so gets into the head of that writer. Like, who writes the line saying, yeah, it all goes downhill after the first kiss? Like, what sad person was like, that's a normal thing people say, right? Like, after the first kiss, yeah, it goes downhill, right? That's how it works, guys. It's like, what? No, don't write that. Nobody.
Enjoy this kiss. It's as good as it gets, baby.
Nobody thinks that.
Who does that?
Nobody thinks that.
He has a lot to... He has a reputation, right? If he sucks in bed, what's he going to do?
Superman, right?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a lot of expectation. Yeah, he's got like, to live up to a lot.
He just lifts a building. Like, well, I heard he suck in bed. He's like, just like lifts a skyscraper.
Well, did you see that? Did you see that VFX short?
You just imagine two ladies at tea the next day going, more like pretty good.
That's a great joke.
Did you see this VFX short that came out? It was kind of like taking on the concept of like a Man of Steel, like a Superman type of thing, and it was from the perspective of people on the ground, and it was just like an alien being
who is just murdering criminals yeah. and doesn't talk at all is now on Earth and we can't stop it. And it's just like a horror film.
No.
It's a really interesting.
Really?
That sounds
awesome.
Really interesting.
That sounds
out.
Cool.
Because it's like this guy's just like, it's just this guy, it's this like faceless thing just floating around and just killing people. And that's like, we can't stop him. Like, what is this? And it's like, turns into a horror movie. It's like, yeah, pretty much.
But if he's from a Midwest town, then it's totally cool.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's
what it is.
He's American. American, red, white, blue, American.
He was in the league. It's totally fine. Yeah, but it was weird. I thought it was a great, or at least a different approach, because everyone, when they make Superman, everybody wants to make the origin story. Like, I don't know how many times we're going to watch that in our lifetimes. Yeah. Superman's origin.
My dad even was like, yeah, I was like, what do you think, Dad? He's like, I don't know. I saw this movie before.
At least this one was weird, that it treated him like an alien. Like, that was it was a weird alien movie.
When it opens up and it's like, welcome to alien world. I was like, all right.
The first 15 minutes were my favorite part because I was like, what? I couldn't believe this was the movie. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
flying wings.
Like dinosaurs and shit.
Yeah, it looks like a new MMO.
Yeah. I was like, what trailer? Well, at least it was really interesting. I don't know.
That was interesting.
But now we're at that point where the end of the year, I mean, you already saw Wolf of Wall Street, but like now there's too many good movies.
So good.
There's just a ton of American Hustle's coming out.
I didn't get a chance to see 12 Years a Slave yet, which I hear is like prepare yourself to just be depressed
right
for the weekend.
Inside Llewyn Davis was
Inside
great.
Inside Llewyn Davis was really good.
Coen Brothers movie. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
But Gravity, like right up until December, was really the clear standout of the year for me, at least.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was at Thanksgiving. I was talking to one of my friends. He's a guy who worked at works at Pixar, mm-hmm. and he was like, "What do you think about Gravity?" And like, I don't know why I feel this way, because like I was like, "Ooh, I should just in case." I'd be like, "Oh, I think it was good." Blah blah blah. And then he was like, I really liked him. Like, yeah, I know, it was a masterpiece, right? He's like, yeah, it was. It was like this moment, because everybody got like so tied up in the weird nerd stuff around it, where it was like, because I heard all this weird backlash from people being like, oh, I don't believe the story, and it's like, oh, it's so ham-hand. And I was like, I don't think of that.
You know me, I'm like the opposite. If I liked something, I was like, I fucking love that.
No, I know.
I came out of Gravity literally being like, that was the most. That was seeing Lord of the Rings for the first time, or it was like seeing Star Wars for the first time. It was the first time I've sat in a theater in a long time where I was just.
Felt like a kid.
Fucking in awe. Like, not even believing how you do this as a movie. Like, I was just blown away.
And I know for us, we were sat there and like, what the fuck are we doing on this shitty videos on you? Like, what is this? Who's watching this master of cinema?
Well, there's like, a point where it's like, just, not that you could do something, but there's a point where even when you watch really good movies, like now that, you know, we've been making movies, you can understand it. Like, you'd be I get how they did that. I can't do it as well, but I understand. Like, I could get that. When I watched Gravity, I was just like, I don't even know where.
No idea how that
to happened. Begin. No. Like, I don't even know how
like,
you
what do you
get
even conceptualize just like the blocking of that movie? I'm just like, I don't even know.
And it was so visually good, and also it messed with your heart so much.
Oh my
because
God.
Because there's several moments where you're just like, oh my God, you're right there, just grab it. Oh no. And then like one thing after another, like spoiling it at the end, you know, she's.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then she gets stuck in the stuff.
That was the most, it was like, so smart because it was so weightless that like that final thing was almost the most terrifying moment because all of a sudden you felt gravity and underwater and it was just like.
So she lands and you're like.
Yeah, I remember just like literally not breathing,
Christ.
I was just staring.
And then she's going down, it's like, no! And then like, she gets out and she gets caught in the thing, it's like,
no, and like, it was interesting because, again, it's your theme back on the conceptual level, it's like, okay, to use water and the feeling of drowning as to contrast this whole movie, it's just like, how do you get to that decision? Like, I don't even,
well,
like,
such an
so,
elegant,
it's such
straightforward,
a clean
simple
way of
script.
Getting a feeling across. I was just like, mind blowing. Anyway,
well, there's so little stuff that even touches the surface of the planet in that movie, and not to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't watched it, but it's like, I think that's a message too, is that like she spends the whole time in this like harsh environment, the most inhospitable environment you can imagine, but then it's like Earth not that much better. Earth is better dealing with it, you know?
Yeah. It's just as inhospitable.
Do you know, I don't know if they shot it later or if they cut it, but there's a whole thing shot with the guy on the radio that she talks to with
a
dog.
It was a short film that his brother did. I still haven't seen it, but I think it is online now. Did you watch it?
No. Is it so? It's shot wholly after.
Yeah, it was Caronzo's Alfonso Cuarón's brother did it.
It's named after the guy on the radio. His name is Anwat, I think is his name.
Is that
the guy with the dog?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like. Then when you see what his environment's like, he's in the middle of the tundra. He looks like a Northern Asia, like Siberian hunter,
like Mongolian, or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it's just like this guy. And it's like. You see him, you're like, I don't want to be there either. You know what I mean? It's like, it's all horrible. All these environments are terrible.
Yeah, and I will say, like, for a movie, like, you know, for I think for us, you know, just from the filmmaking background, it's very easy during the movie to just, okay, I can see what they're doing. This shot, this is the reverse. Oh, it's interesting lighting here.
It does
you get into that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was, for the first time, I think, in years, I was 100% wrapped in Gravity. I was not thinking about the technical side of it, aside from like the first shot, which was a one take. I was like, oh, that's an interesting one take. But then from that point on, it was just like, I was 100% there with it. I was like,
the same way.
I walked out of the theater being like, I've not felt like that in a movie years.
There's that moment where the silence is just so powerful. It's like the first time that everything's getting smashed to pieces.
Yeah.
And it's just dead silent because it's space.
Yeah.
And it's happening behind them. And it's just like, if that was on Earth, it'd be like,
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, nothing. And it's such a powerful moment. It was really weird.
And I think a lesser filmmaker would be like, oh, we need to have some kind of sound to do. It's like, no, just be quiet. Just watch it.
Everyone would have Michael Bay'd it, and I'm glad that
No, absolutely. Well, there's a good interview somewhere about the script notes he got from the studio.
Interesting.
And they eventually, like, you know, they kind of let him do it, but they definitely responded and gave him notes, and they were like, literally one of the notes was like, can she have a romance with the NASA guy on the other end of the line? Like, can't that be, like, her
Ed
husband?
Harris.
Yeah, literally, Ed Harris's character. He's like, no. like, why? Like, those were all the questions. We're like, can she have a romance there now? Can you be cutting back and forth to NASA the whole time? And stuff like that. It's like, no, of course not. That's
no, and
never do it.
And you know what it really comes down to is just like, it's just everybody in Hollywood has these ideas of like, okay, here's how we make a movie, and here's how we make money on the movie, right? It's like, okay, here, on a high level, sci-fi movie starring Sandra Bullock, and it's her just the whole movie, sci-fi movie. And it's like, any traditional guy would be like, nah, that wouldn't be it. No. But it's like, because it's a woman as the main character, I think, it's like that. My mom really wanted to see it because she really likes Sandra Bullock. Mm-hmm. That's why she saw it. Like, if it was like, hey, mom, I want to watch this sci-fi thing, she'd be like, no, go away. I don't want to watch this sci-fi shit. But it's like, there's a certain level of like, this is sort of like, this is a conversation I had earlier, which is kind of interesting, which is like, we are in a world with analytics and data, and everything can be measured. And we know Netflix knows the moment your eyes look away from a thing, and when you're clicking, and the second that you lose interest. And there's so much that we measure. And from a perspective of creation, if we go into that from that perspective, it's like, okay, we should be, as Netflix can, House of Cards, sure bet, people will like it because we have this, we'll plug these things in, we know these analytics and stuff like that. But there's also the side of things that's like, what you can't measure, and it's like, and where that filmmaker taps into that underlying truth, that underlying resonance, which is, I think, if even if you had all the data in the world, everything, every aspect of that you could measure, you still couldn't get at. And that to me is like why I think movies are still interesting, because you can get away from this boring route application of mathematics and data analytics and try and get to something that you can't measure and display it. Anyway.
It's like art, man.
Yeah, man.
No, like, but what you're talking about, though, I've seen people try to apply that to the theatrical experience. Like, it wasn't Relativity Media was started by a guy. That's what he did. Is but he had the Moneyball approach.
Essentially,
analyzing, like, what would make a hit. But I think then you end up with stuff that's generic, more generic, or it's, like, middle of the road.
Yeah,
and you don't end up with stuff like Gravity. Like, Gravity would never fall into those
equations. There's a whole Wall Street article about the guy who sells us stats. The biggest problem with that is that you're actually, the big problem is that you're measuring trends that are popular now.
Yep.
So you're constantly chasing. It was like, right, before Game of Thrones, nobody would be like, oh, Game of Thrones is like a perfect, that's like the thing to do, right? People love, there's lots of fantasy things that are popular.
You know what would be a cultural milestone that will go beyond the nerdy crowd? Yeah, a hard fantasy novel adaptation.
Yeah, but now if you were to do analytics, you'd be like, oh, we should totally do a hard fantasy. And then you're going to have a bunch of like copied Game of Thrones. They're all going to suck or be just not as good as Game of Thrones. And then somebody will do something that nobody thought of. And then that will be the big popular thing. The problem is that when you do stats, is that you're assuming
you're looking at the world around you. You're not looking at
And there's like everything from wars to economics to just like science discoveries constantly changes what people are interested in and what culture is about. So like to constantly be measuring what's already popular, like you'll do okay, but you're not going to make the Star Wars. You're not going to make the Game of Thrones. You're not going to make whatever.
Yeah. It's one of those you never told.
Not going to make the red versus blue.
But yeah, it's like if you take red versus blue, take anything. If you take something that did well and you, or somebody say something that didn't do well and you just moved it to another point in history, would it have done better? Same production, everything.
Yeah. No.
Like, I've always wondered, what's the movie that made the most amount of money based on nothing else other than the fact of when it came out? And I think Godfather might have been that. It was the heyday of theatrical. Then it got cable. Then it got VHS. They got VHS rental. Then it got DVD. It got
like
laser
right
disc
at the window of all these new technologies of Windows
it
emerged
got all of them
as it was going out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
like there's not going to be a laser disc of Wolf of Wall Street, probably.
I don't know if you've seen Inside Llewyn Davis, but that's literally what like that movie's about. It's like there was all these folk singers before Bob Dylan. They were just, it was literally just the wrong time. Like, all these guys were starving artists. All these guys were making beautiful folk songs. And it was
just
like,
as committed and unrelenting.
Everybody who quit before Bob Dylan, like, that's just sucked for you. Like, that's it. Like, the moment Bob Dylan happened, you all became huge.
And so to tie this conversation all the way back to where we're going, timing. Timing is such an interesting thing because you look at the Malcolm Gladwell thing where it's like everybody who made a difference in the computer world is within a year of each other.
Yeah.
All those directors, Spielberg and Coppola, within a year of each other because they were the right age for the time that different things within outside of their control came into place. And I feel like that a lot of the times with what we do, which is like we're in a place where technology just got there, mm-hmm. and then the ability to do editing just got there, and the fact that distribute you can even directly, distribute yep. it just directly. Got there. And it was yep. like, if and you think about it, it's like if I was 5 years younger, I would be in film school and I'd be catching up. Mm-hmm. And if I was 5 years older, I would have gotten. You know, it's like there's a window that we're definitely feels like we're in, and it's like. It's just how much. It's so weird sometimes to think about like how much of it's just a like, good thing you were born, like. Then,
yeah, and I'm older demographically than most of the people who are making content on YouTube. I mean, it's
you're,
like you guys
you're one of the pioneers.
Way younger well, yeah, than yeah. I am, but I was 28 when I started, just because the technology. I was in college when the internet began. You know, yeah, I mean, yeah, I know yeah. it's been around for decades, yeah, but 95 was when it became a real commercial AOL. Level product. Yeah,
that's
AOL. Good.
That's when it is,
and which still makes money off.
Yeah, and AOL even the CompuServe like predate Prodigy, predated yeah, all that. But it's like then all of a sudden, like everyone had an email address in like 95.
Oh, real quick, this game we played. What was your first username?
Gosh, my first one was Belasco, and that was my character in Ultima that then I used on BBS boards. Yeah,
that's nice.
Dial up BBS Gav? Boards.
Mine was Gavino. Still, to this day is my username.
Yeah,
Gavino.
Yeah. Yep.
Good one. Nice, good one.
But it's like, and that's probably the most common question, like at panels and stuff like that we get is like, hey, what's your advice to someone starting out today? It's like, I have no idea because I'm not starting out today.
Yeah, exactly.
I really, and the stuff I would tell you. Wouldn't be applicable it's to
relevant.
You guys today.
It was relevant to me at the time, and maybe it's relevant now. I have no clue. Yeah.
Like some of the biggest success stories within our company, like building out our merch model, building out our own website, that wasn't, I mean, it's I'm proud of the vision that we had to do that, but we also had to do those things because there wasn't a YouTube, and we couldn't do those. We couldn't, you know, sell ads and all that on the scale that you can with YouTube now, or, you know, the way things are, ad networks that for video pre-roll and all that. Those things... Video pre-roll didn't even exist.
Yeah.
How would you video pre-roll in a downloadable file? You know, wouldn't even make sense. But
or they'd be pissed.
Yeah. It's like everyone would see it every single time. And then you'd have a version where it's stripped out like right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had to build all those things because we had to do those things to survive. And if they worked, we just held on to them.
Yeah.
Like we had premium subscriptions back in 2003 that looked just like Kickstarter today. If you did, if you subscribed at this level, you got this benefit.
You're welcome,
at
by the way.
Yeah, there you go. He was one of our, he bought our first season 3 DVD, I remember.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
you're like, there. You're hardcore mega fan. I was really hardcore fan.
Yeah. And I ended up directing a season of Red vs. Blue. It was a very weird change.
That's awesome.
To be a viewer. And then, oh, now I'm Caboose.
Season 7.
Do you ever wonder what, like, because we're all this kind of the same kind of person in terms of what we're interested in stuff.
Sure.
If we were born 30, 40 years before, what do you think we would, like, what kind of people are we? Like, what would we be doing?
That's a good point.
No, what would we done in Hollywood, trying to make our way in Hollywood. I don't know.
I was starting out to be a doctor before this stuff started, so I probably would have stayed on that path.
The window is really amazing. Like
yeah. In the 50s, I would have been racially segregated against in a lot of different places.
I
was making that joke about Johnny Rockets. I was like, that's so cool. It's so nostalgic. I'm like, yeah, the 50s, like when I couldn't go into this restaurant. I love that. Yeah.
I always
phrase shows up, hey, does anybody need a railroad?
Yeah. I mean, blowing myself up, building this country's railroad. Yeah.
There you go.
I have the same
Irish
thing,
descent,
though.
So I would have been like in the gutter.
We would have met each other in the middle.
Yeah.
Driving that golden
spot. Scorsese would be making a movie about you, yeah.
I have the same thoughts when I think about the slow-mo stuff, is that I'm in the perfect window for doing slow-mo.
Oh, interesting.
Because 5 years from now, I mean, the iPhone already does 120 frames.
Yeah.
I could have missed it by 5 years, and then slow-mo wouldn't be unique in the way it is now. So I mean, it's kind of not now. Like everyone, like an epic.
But when you started out, it was like, what?
Yeah.
And, the big thing for me was always like seeing it out of the context of a documentary on a bullet shooting through a water balloon. It's like, great, fantastic.
Like really,
how many
really
water balloons have, how many frames of footage are there of a card being shot through, of a milk droplet forming the crown? Like, do we need to keep shooting it at this point? I think we're done. Let me finally do it. I've always held out that one day, this would be the decline of society. There will be a slow-mo video of a man who agrees to get shot in the shoulder in slow-mo.
We did talk about this.
And will be and full on, a bullet will go through and he'll capture it in full. It'll be some performance art piece.
It's gonna happen within soon.
And I will.
I'll bet within 2 years.
Ooh.
Well, I've told you about my website for when I'm dead, right?
No.
It's not a website. It's called Bodies for Movies. And you can donate your corpse to a film and they'll blow it up or...
It's like a stunt really stump corpse?
That's so messed up.
Stunt corpse.
When I was a kid, I thought stunt people were just people who wanted to kill themselves. They let them jump off a building and they'll film it.
In Korea, that is still the case, actually. In Southeast Asia, that is in fact the case. There was an incredible NPR article about piece about stuntmen, because it's like, to get in, it's like, you're barrier to entry. It's like, you're going to hurt yourself. Everyone else is willing to, so you got to do it too. And it's like, all right,
we
fine,
did it.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And this, and by the way, I think there's just like, and well, who knows, right? Digital, I've seen some digital tests of like, you know, stunt guy get thrown out of a car and gets run over, and it's like a digital, fully digital version of it. It's not there yet, but it's like, as with all technology, everyone's like, that's what I think in film school. It's like, yeah, digital sucks right now. It's like, you know that like computers get better, right?
All the
like,
time.
It's, like, it's not like your computer just stopped. Like technology continues. And I was like, well, you know that this will look better eventually. And it's like,
as a whole rant.
In film school, it's just like, it's everyone like, was like.
All films the same too. It's like nobody didn't like the change from Technicolor to other film. There's people who are like, oh, Technicolor makes shit look better than real life. Why are we moving to fucking Kodak and this other bullshit?
Yeah. Well, then
but of course, film's only real film unless it's on Kodak.
Well, then I argue too. I'm like, well, do you mean 35mm film? Because 70 is arguably is superior in every way. In every metric that you measure film versus digital, 70 beats 35. So how come everything isn't shot in 70? Like, well, it's practical. It's like, right! Exactly! Thank you!
Like digital, yeah.
Anyways.
But it's crazy. I mean, you can illustrate that to people. You show them video games, show them real-time rendered animation. A video game today would have been a top-of-the-line movie in 95.
Well, we keep going on tangents, but they're interesting tangents. I hope you guys don't mind.
Not at all.
But there was one really interesting thing that Matt and we talked about. What is it about video game graphics that we cannot see the past?
Because when you saw the N64, I was like, this is real life.
Oh,
like
I know
like
what
the
you're
first
saying.
Time I saw the
there's
N64.
There's no like in the retrospect, the hindsight of it is so hard. Like, how did I even think of that this was even close to looking good?
Everyone has a game when they saw it, they said, this is as good as it's gonna get.
Yeah.
Unreal.
I think
first Unreal
has
for
moment.
Me. Like, Unreal? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I was like,
Ocarina of Time, the opening cutscene of Ocarina of Time where like the whatever the spirits are like spinning in the air and they look
Matt
golden
cried.
And shit. I'm just like, what the hell?
Matt cried.
I was like, this is
These
real
are
life.
Real.
This is real. I look back and I was like, what?
I can always pinpoint those moments in video games, though. Like, to me, there's always been moments where I look at something and it's like, hey, that's the first time I've seen that in a game, and then every game will have that, and then you think, like,
yeah.
Like lens flare.
Lens flares,
and
yeah.
Like, I remember the first Splinter Cell on Xbox, there was, like, a fabric hanging.
Yeah.
There was light shining through the fabric.
Oh,
I walked
right,
through,
right.
It bumped the fabric,
oh,
and
yep,
the shadow changed, and I was like,
shot.
That's real life.
Yeah.
And now,
yeah.
If a game didn't have that, you'd be like, this game's broken. Someone broke it.
I remember the exact hallway in Splinter Cell.
And the only thing it is, I think it has something to do with the fact that, because obviously it's not real life. We know that. But there's something, it's like, it occupies this sort of abstract animation side of things, where it's just like, well, this is the best animation style I've seen. You're like, I feel the same way. You're going to feel the same way about, like, Frozen and the
Disney when you go
movies.
Back to look at the first Toy Story, it's like,
yeah.
It feels so rudimentary.
Yeah, it's just weird, because I think, like, as you, in that, locked in that moment, it's like, that's where animation is. Right, and so it's like you don't have context for other similarly abstract depictions of reality.
Yeah.
So that's the best that you get. But everyone has that effect.
People
so
don't want games to get too realistic, right? If games became just the same as life, but they
Some
had to build
do.
In the stuff. Like, imagine if you're running in a video game and your character just trips.
That'd be
people trip in real life,
Smash
but you'd be
Brothers.
Annoyed in the game if you're running along and then you trip. For
wasn't
no reason.
That Jurassic Park Trespasser game where they modeled out your whole body so your gun would get stuck in doors and you have to like back on my turn sideways and like slide
like
through it? Yeah, it was like just like real
great.
Life.
It's the quap of first-person shooters.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that does happen. You know, we're talking to guys who are like military guys, and like, yeah, when we wear night vision, we only see this very narrow window. Like, we fall a lot because you have a choice. You either look at where guys are shooting you from or your feet. And guess what? Guys are shooting at you. You're looking at them. So it's like, yeah, they're like, yeah, we have a thing. Like, in over the radio, we'll call out when we fall because it happens so often. As a joke, we all yell parkour when we fall.
That's amazing.
And it's like, because it's like, well, yeah. And it's like, it's always funny when the real life version of it's just like, yeah, this just stumbly. You're stumbly as hell. You're just falling over. So.
But there's, like, I've been playing GTA Online. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
In the single player game, you can skip cab rides and stuff.
And
in online,
like,
you can't, and you end up just like, sat in a cab, and it's like, I did this earlier today, and now I'm doing it again. It's just inconvenient.
We were trying to come up with the most inflammatory comment you can make, especially in a
yeah.
year when consoles are being released.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided that you could just get on Twitter and just say, hey, guys, what do you think is the best console, the Xbox, the PS4, or the iPhone? And that was just like,
that's great.
Because everyone thinks they know where that's going to go,
it.
And then when they
yeah.
get to it, they'd be like,
oh,
I hate
man.
You.
That's amazing.
That's it.
That's amazing.
We should all tweet that and make a website
right
to sponsor from that. We should wrap it up here. We've been running
been for
here.
A while.
This is
Sorry,
a good
guys.
One. This is a fun one. I really enjoyed this conversation.
I just want to say, something I keep wanting to say to tie this back in is that we talked about what we do
yeah.
narrative stuff. One thing we should all realize, too, is that, you know, Gavin has some huge, like, viral hits. I know you guys do, too.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, what we do narrative-wise, at least for us, I've always accepted the fact that telling a story, which is what I want to do, is always going to hit at a lower level. A series is a different game to play.
Yep. Yeah. It's restaurants versus fast food. McDonald's is going to sell more hamburgers than whatever you got, even if you got the best restaurant in the world.
You will never be the cat falling off the roof video of the day, or the kid coming home from the dentist. You know,
yeah.
That'll be the big video. You'll never beat that video ever. Like for Red versus Blue, I could sit in front of a room full of people and explain what Red versus Blue is, or I could stand up there and go, Leroy Jenkins, and everybody you know? I mean, that was a huge video.
And the problem right now is that our narrative stuff is held to that same standard as
page views is just a universal number that is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you guys have 10 million views doesn't seem like anything now that every music video is 100 million views.
Yeah.
You know that every cat video has 200 million views.
So there's no way to measure what we do, honestly, fairly.
I just want to see a version of that video where he actually does go, Leroy Jenkins.
An entire crowd. You're rough.
Yeah. You know, and it's something you just have to accept, and it's totally different. And, you know, it's a good thing to make videos.
I mean, we'll see what happens in five. Part of it is what I kind of alluded to is, like, I just don't even know. I think they'll change, but as of now, like, the interface and experience of YouTube, I don't think is best suited for long form content like that. Whereas Netflix is, or Hulu is. But even then, they're not perfect either, and they're going to figure it out. Who knows what HBO is going to be 5 years from now? So
yeah, we were nominating our awards, and it's like we were nominating the best television show category. We're like, is this even a category anymore? Because
what does that mean?
Where does VGHS fall with House of Cards, with Walking Dead? I mean, I
know House of Cards compared to even just something on NBC. Like at this point, like,
I know you have some trouble with the pronunciation of it. We all understand that, and we apologize.
VGHS,
very difficult. So, what you guys got going on? Plug some stuff.
Well, we have the Rushi podcast all the time. Gavin works on Slow Mo Guys and our Achievement Hunter, which are gameplay videos on YouTube.
Real quick, I want to plug Gauntlet Season 2, which I think
Freddie was on.
I'm not kidding here. I think it's the best reality thing on online, period. It was so funny. It was cut together well. It was written well. It was actually entertaining. It
really funny.
Me
it was fun to make, right? I had a lot of fun when we did that, just hanging out.
It's
just
our
being
competitive, in quotes, gaming show that we do.
It honestly was. It was a great experience and hilarious. So I know a lot of our audience has not seen it. We've been pushing people over to it. Guys, check out Gauntlet Season 2. It's how many episodes is it total?
Eight total
episodes. Fantastic. I think it was hilarious. I was laughing my ass off.
There's nothing
we
enjoy
time.
More than making fun of ourselves.
Yeah,
holding ourselves
in
low regard.
The Greg camping episode is my personal. Like when
that was
we're
incredible.
All just playing this,
incredible.
Just so who knew it could get so tense? It was amazing. It was intense. It's like so many different subplots to that game. Like everyone's
Justine's Redemption and all that. Yeah.
Oh, incredible!
And then we have our mainstay shows, Red versus Blue, and then of course our new show Ruby.
Which, as far as I can tell, is the only animation really type of series that's being attempted. I mean, I guess that's
CG, like as you say, Western anime. It's
totally different. Trying to do something different. So. Just check us out at roosterteeth.com or youtube.com/roosterteeth.
Cool. Thanks for coming by, guys.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was top.
The end.